The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. Rob is now here for today's episode of Stream Streak.
Hello, welcome to Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Streak Day 222. And I'm joined today by Owen the Man Jackson. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm a man. I don't think I'm the man, but I'm very well. How are you, Rob? You good?
You are to me. We'll just like be honest right now. I woke up several times last night being sick. So I'm not probably, there won't be the energy from me that you've come to know and love, which has been slightly salty, but sometimes very enthusiastic. So we'll just put that out there. We'll put that out there and then everyone knows. And then, I'm excited though, because one of my favorite things to do is talk lists in Age of Sigmar, and that's today's show. There's an event happening at the weekend. Do you want to tell us about the event?
Yeah, so this is run by PASC, who's, contributes to, enters lots of different TTS tournaments, and now he's decided to run his own, which is called the Butcher's Buffet GT. So it's a nice format. As the tournament grew, he's changed it from 5 to 6 games, so really good, you know, excellent chance of getting a true winner. But, you know, 6 games, even on a weekend, is pretty draining when you're playing in real life, let alone sort of in front of a computer for 2 days solid. So he's actually split it up over 6 weeks. So he's released all the battle plans and he's done the first round pairings, and essentially you can sort of play your game in that week. So whilst you don't perhaps have that sort of buzz of everyone in one place or playing together, it does mean that he can make it a 6-game format. People can sort of play in and around family life and work and everything. So, yeah, it's great. And he got, 52 players. So a really big field.
And there's a lot of, players that we know and love as well from all around the world, which is fun. It's nice. It's like a who's who, a smorgasbord, you could say, of a cheese plate. Is that what
it is? A dining platter, a mezze. Let's call it a Warhammer mezze, if you like.
Yeah, a Plowman's of Warhammer players.
Delicious.
That's what happens with the lunchtime show. Yeah. hello, everyone who's joined us live in Twitch chat. I see you all there. Scrivo, Marcus Rock, Big Goldfish, Ziggy, I saw you, Chief, Tomb King Tristan, what up? Hope you are well, Dockerall. I hope everyone is okay. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, of course, to everyone on the Honest Wargamer Patreon and anyone who listens to the podcast. Please stay hydrated and healthy. That is the one thing I did yesterday, to try and keep my levels up. Pete the Wargamer, big love to you. We're going to talk about the meta of lists. It's 2,000 points match play, as you would expect. And we're going to talk about our 5 lists that we enjoyed or that we liked. To be honest, Owen, it's a very centralized meta, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's as you would put it, Rob, it's very on the nose. So we've got, we've looking at it, as I say, 52 players. I haven't done a huge in-depth. The list's only got released sort of in the middle of the night for us, or this morning, early doors. So I haven't gone through everything. But there's 52 players. There's 24 factions. But when I say it's on the nose, the usual suspects are there in full attendance. So we've got 8 Lumineth Realm Lords players out of the 52, and then 6 Seraphon players. And then going down the list, we've got 4 more tribes, 4 OBR, Osiok Bone Reapers, 4 Maggotkin of Nurgle, 3 Maggotkin of Nurgle, and then 3 Khorne, which makes me very happy.
Makes me happy. I don't know if you've seen Owen, but I'm actually painting up my Altar of Khorne while the stream sheet's been going on recently. It's one of the lovely models I've got to paint.
The word is out, Rob.
The word is out.
But the word is out. You've seen the light. It's time for the tithe to be paid.
I don't know if I paint the 120 Marauders now or I wait until the winter points to see. It's only 2 months away now. Well, 2.5 months away. So it's kind of like, what do I do? Do I not do it? But then I was honestly just thinking of painting up a shed ton of gore and then just being like, they're my marauders. And if anyone says anything about it, I'll just laugh at them. They'll be like, you can't have goatmen as chaos marauders. I'm like, oh my God, are you mental?
They're the most they're more maraudy than marauders, aren't they, goatmen? They love they a marauding.
Are. They're always marauding. So I think I might do that. I might just do gore and use them as marauders. And if anyone's got a problem with it, I'm just going to just, you know, laugh. I think is going to be my main kind of like, no, you must buy those ugly, like, He-Man models. Okay. All right.
They're just really good though, Rob, aren't they? They're just really, really good. I think Marauders are fine at 160. They're fine. Everyone just needs to chill out.
I think that they're actually, they don't take a punch well. Let's put it that way. They don't.
Something needs to be there to punch them back. I think that's the key point on that one, Rob.
There is. As far as I know, there are two Sons of Behemoth armies in the list, which is one of the lists that I chose. There's two, and I don't think there are any Beast of Chaos armies.
No, there aren't. And picking up on what the Colonel says in the chat, then yes, that's... there's a couple of surprises, actually. So obviously, looking at what's been happening around the world with tournaments, then, you know, your shoot cast or your snipe cast and Caradron Overlords have been, you know, they've been all over the top five of lots of tournaments. And we've only actually got one Stormcast player and one Caradron Overlords player in 52. That's surprising, right?
It is. I think they're outclassed. I think that the KO conversation is a little disingenuous, because when you look at something like a top five, like at the weekend, on Monday, for instance, when I did the tournament results from the weekend, I generally tend to look at top three. And almost always when me and LLV were doing the stat show, we would always look at 5-0 armies. We wouldn't then, because depending on the size of the tourney, and some of the tourneys and most of the tourneys that have been happening recently have been fairly low numbers. So there's been... When there's been 4-1s, maybe there's only been a couple of 4-1s, you know, or maybe someone's won an event and they've gone 4-1-0, for example. Yeah. So they've drawn one instead of winning all five. So really, it's those 5-0 lists, and sometimes exclusively those 6-0 lists that really do pick up my interest a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so top fives, I find, tend to generally be a little bit disingenuous, because then you're like, look at the top 15 from these five tournaments. There's such a spread of armies. I'm like, yeah, but you've gone into threes and twos. You're picking out weird data. So the 5-0s, and I'm very excited about the results of this tournament. The 6-0, especially as the meta is very specific to itself, because it's on TTS. Obviously, people can take a load of Sentinels if they want, you know, models that they maybe don't have. So that means you're going to see, which is quite expensive as a list to build, I think, not overly, but like enough. Like, I think it's around the 400 quid mark, someone pointed out to me the other day. And so to see what they like when they pair up against each other and who kind of slides through, I think is one of those interesting things that we'll see anyway. So I do think that the KO conversation also is that maybe people just don't want to, like, I think the people who play with KO already have them, like, physically. They don't tend to be on TTS a lot, from what I've seen.
No, I hear you on that. I do think that some people have moved away from them, maybe just because they do opt play in a very specific way. I don't know, actually. I'm not going to say that. There is a lot of different builds. I don't know. We're you know, humans are fickle, right? We like to, you know, play around with different things and have different experiences. So perhaps the players who have been doing well with those KO lists kind of want to, you know, spread their wings and play something else. Yeah.
or not fly.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Can I just say quickly, big love to everyone in the chat. Stu Flynn, I've got it finally. It's not Stufflin. It's only taken me 3 years to work that out. After Monday's motivation stream, I have now 12 intercessors undercoated on my desk. How are you? Oh, that's really good. Ziggy, big love to you. I was talking to a friend about Marauders in Hinox Snatchlist. It just gets even worse. I'd like to point out one of my lists is a Snatchlist, and there are actually two Snatchlists that I might talk about both of them, because I think Snatch is in that place now where people are kind of, like, Sinesh was just keepers and generating, like, depravity. Now, Sinesh is, like, you can really explore Sinesh, and maybe you don't go 5-0, but I reckon there's some really exciting Sinesh lists that you can play. That's one of mine.
Yeah. It does sound like we might have chosen very similar lists, actually, because I've chosen the Sinesh list. So are you saying that people are becoming, like, Sinesh curious? Because that's quite a sort of narrative choice as well, right?
Like, it's like Chuck came on the show or Chuck didn't come on the show, but Chuck did a show about it and sent us in some information. I mean, Darren, I think, did a list rundown on it about the Archeon in Sinesh, and I think that there's some real legs there, and it's also a really exciting faction. It's got loads of cool, it's got cool spells, cool allegiance abilities, cool endless spells. Like, there's some really unique characters in there as well. The Epitome, like, there's a bunch of really, really fun stuff. So I think, yeah, people are becoming Sinesh curious, especially when some of the key elements, Archeon, Marauders, those other things, are just transferable. You've got to pay it up for one army, you can use them with Sinesh rules and try them out. So actually, I think it's a really exciting time. Big shout out to Sorry again in the chat. He's just started doing some 30 minutes a night of hobby now after the motivation show, which is good. I'm really happy about that. Well done, bud. all right. So we've talked about the meta, right? I think.
Yeah, the only thing to touch on with the meta was just that the usual suspects, the books that really need some work, are not represented again. So we've got no Sylvaneth, we've got no Legions of Nagash, we've got no Beasts of Chaos, and we've got, I wrote it down, but I don't really know if it's that relevant, we've got no Legion of Asgore either, Rob.
don't worry, our day in the sun will come. Absolutely. It's rough for the Legion of Asgore guys. They move 4 inches, they shoot 16, and then they have to look at some pointy-eared elves doing their work. Plus, things like, if you want dwarf shooting or even dwarf fighting, there's some solid dwarf lists that you can put into Cities of Sigmar at this point, right? And it's as old as the Stormcast book. It's never had any points reduction since it first came out. It's just Classic Games Workshop. They've made no effort and they've done nothing about it and they don't care. So it's just going to languish as it is.
They need a brand new battle pamphlet, don't they, Rob?
Yeah. or at least like a battle insert. Like, they need some sort.
Oh, yeah, God.
That's really got me going. okay. Gitly asked in the chat, can we just address the bombshell that rocked my world this week? Sure. People are suggesting the max number of the same unit in army will be limited to 3 in the next edition. If they nerf 8 individual Korgoth lists, I will fucking riot. What will Games Workshop do when you write them witty puns in emails? They will be triggered. Is what they mean. okay, Owen, take me through your first list. Let's see what we got.
Right, well, I'm going to have to find it. We chatted about this earlier, didn't we, that Tabletop TO is groaning under the pressure probably of the amount of tournaments that are going on online. So we have to sort of scroll through. So
I would have put them on the screen otherwise for you guys, but the desktop version is just like dead on arrival right now. So
I'm not sure. I reckon that we may have ended up choosing some similar lists. So I'm going to start off with a player of note. Ooh. And someone who is probably expecting to do well, which is Chris Welfare.
Chose that list as well, so there we go. Saves us.
Ah, look at that. Well, you can fill in the gaps in the things that I don't know.
Unlikely.
So it's a Hammerhall list, so Cities of Sigmar Hammerhall, and he is running the Celestial Hurricanum with a Battle Mage, with the Wings of Fire spell from the lore, a Battle Mage on foot with Cindercloud, a Freeguild General with the command trait Blood of the Twelve, a Sorceress on foot with Wings of Fire again. Obviously looks to be an important spell for him. And they're the Adjutant. Then a cheeky little Assassin with the Saint's Blade, which is quite a saucy little pick.
I like that a lot.
And then for his battle line, obviously battle line being important with the new sort of rule set or the new missions in the General's Handbook 2020, he's got a chonky load of battle line, and he has 30 Freeguild Greatswords, 30 Freeguild Handgunners, 20 Freeguild Handgunners, 20 Freeguild Crossbows, 10 Dark Shards, and then 2x3 Aetherwings, which crop up a lot now, don't they? And then a Soul Screen Bridge. Not mandatory Soul Screen Bridge, but often seen Soul Screen Bridge. I think between us, Rob, should we sort of pick this apart?
So I'd like to talk about the Soul Screen Bridge bit, if you don't mind, for a moment.
Yeah,
because actually,
of course.
I think there's a significant difference with this list or with any list in you want like you have to achieve Soul Screen Bridge. So look, we saw last year at Blood and Glory, I think Tom Morsley went 5-0 with Seeks of Sigmar list specifically, and that was in Hallow Heart, where it had a very similar kind of loadout. It had a bunch of handgunners, it had the bridge, and then what it would do is it would, because of all the bonuses to cast, that was a guaranteed bridge, and then mm-hmm. he would guarantee alpha off like a whole bunch of stuff, like it was phenomenal damage. You can read the list somewhere if you go onto Tabletop TO.
I'm putting them in the chat. There you go.
There's a link in the chat, but it is working really dodgy today, so it might take you a while to get there. But the nice thing, I think, a lot of the time with a list like this is that the threat is as good as the action in some cases, because you're controlling the board space significantly, and someone's like, well, if he does bridge, don't forget in Cities of Sigmar, the bridge you can place anywhere on the board, so there's some real big adaptability to it, so like where you cast it from, so you can castle back quite nicely, which is good. But it's just the fact that you can means your opponent has to plan for it.
Yeah, one thing, it's not anywhere.
Is it 24?
It is within 24, yeah.
Is it portal that's anywhere? Even so,
it's the Umbral Spell Portal that's anywhere. Yeah, no, it's within 24, but then you do have the fact that the you've got the 6-inch, you've got another 6 inches from the bubble that surrounds it that you need to place. So they can move super far because they can be 6 inches sort of back behind the first bridge. And then when they're moved, they can then be 6 inches in front of the second bridge. So they can move like 30 inches or so. And then with the range on all of his shooting, you know, it's got reach to push all the screens back. Yeah, so it is a massive factor, right? That Soul Screen Bridge.
It is. And it just means your opponent like has to just be aware that it can occur. I think, because you would be like, well, it's quite risky. Even though you've got the Hurricane, which is going to give you +1 to cast, and you've got the Sorceress as well, who can stab the Dark Shards for bonus points. So you have very reliable, like, there's a lot of reliability in that list to cast it. I just think that, you know, without the Hallow Heart, it's not like terrifying.
But I like think that the little general is the thing that I've noticed, which is he can give +1 to hit and +1 to wound to 3 free guild units, which is basically all of his stuff that's in the battle line there. He can give them +1 to hit, +1 to wound if they haven't charged. So, and that's just in the hero phase. So he can see if he gets the bridge off, and then he can spend the CP to give them all that buff. And again, then he can move them through the bridge. So
yeah, we should say very quickly that the bridge allows every unit within six inches. You cast one half of the bridge, the other half of the bridge, like Owen said, anywhere within 24, and then you can take all the models that were in there in the movement phase, and you can move them to the other end of the bridge like a teleport, effectively. So it allows you to, instead of just teleporting one unit or a couple, teleports basically most of an army across an area, which is really, really scary with the handgunners, because the handgunners then can just unload all their shooting. You could do a charge in as well. So there's like, that's why it exists. That's what people take it for. So Soul Screen Bridge is an endless spell. And then in there are 80, only 80 handgunners, to give you some indication of just quite how good they are. And because the Hurricane will also teleport over with them as well, they're all getting +1 to hit on their shooting attack, which is significant. So like that's really how it works. And then there's just 30 free guild greatswords, which they're a great combat unit, but their job is going to be standing in front of that, take any kind of counter charge, maybe not forgetting that you've got stand and shoot on the handgunners as well. I think that's right.
Yeah, and I think he's doubled up on Wings of Fire. Yeah, so exactly, if you the first unit or a unit finishes within 3 inches of the handgunners, then they can shoot. So yeah, it's basically like a reactive charge shot, a bit like a Fangs of Sotek, but you don't need to spend the CP. But I do think on the greatswords, they're a bit, you've got to be careful of them, because they get +1 to charge, obviously, because they've got a banner or a musician, you know, in their command group. But then the Wings of Fire spell is another +1 to run and charge. So you can bridge and then be on a 7. And if you get a bonkers charge, they can fly. I'd love to see a flying unit, like, roll double 6 and do a 14-inch flying unit with a load of greatswords over the top of the screen. Yeah! I mean, that's just cool, right?
That is cool. That would look awesome. Oh, and also, you could paint them up as angels, and it would look great. That's fun. Yeah, it's a super cool list. And also, don't forget, so they're also in Hammerhall as well. So because they're in Hammerhall, when they do teleport over, if they're in their opponent's territory, they're going to be able to attack twice if there's a character nearby or a hero nearby. The Assassin's the interesting one for me. The Assassin with the Saint's Blade. No idea.
Essentially the Saint's Blade gives him an extra pip of rend on the blade. And an extra damage when he's within 6 inches of an objective. So he can nip out, and he then has got 6 attacks, 3s and 3s, -2, 2 damage, and he gets mortals on 6s to hit, I believe, like D3 mortals on a 6. So I think he can nip out he can nip out of, say, your unit of great swords but that's flown over, and then clear an objective. I mean, he will rinse a little 10-man unit that's got a 5-up save or something that's holding a backfield objective, can't he? Easily. Mm-hmm. And it's not too much of an investment. I think a lot of people take the Twin Stones, which gives you some more pluses to hit, I believe. It's like a bit of a flex. You can use 2 different abilities on it. So it's nice to see the blade. One thing to note as well on Hammerhall is that in your own deployment zone, you're Battleshock immune. So he's got all these lads, and even if they get hit hard, say from an alpha, because he's not going to have choice of turn because he's so high drop. So yeah, he's going to, even if he does get alphaed, then nothing's going to run away. So he's then got plenty of CP to spend on that free guild general ability, and then perhaps rerolling the charge when he needs to go over. And I think Hammerhall, you get the banners. So all those units, your 1, 2, 3, 4, he's got 5 units to roll on to get another CP. There's no fat on the list, is there? It's very tight. There's a lot of nice synergies.
And it's super functional. Like everything works together really well, and all of the units even if you wanted to charge in the handgunners, not that you would, but you could to pin something in. But yeah, there's a lot. All right, it's a great list. Well done, Chris, as always. Also, can I just quickly, before we talk about any list, there's 2 lists here that I talked about on Monday, which I'm very excited about: the good guy list and the bad guy list. The bad guy list being the Zytrek 70 Sentinel list. I think I saw that at least once, maybe twice, in the list of things. You can go back on Monday and listen to me talk about that in some detail if you want to. So I'm excited to see how that does again, and if it was more of a fluke or just, like we've talked about, you know, that big number. When you talk about 39, 40 mortal wounds to a single unit, that sounds terrible. But it's a lot of things to make that happen, and actually it's probably better at chip damage and a bunch of other stuff. My man Mitch McCowan, who at this point is probably like my hero, he's becoming my Warhammer hero. He's turned up again with the Winterbite list, which I talked about again on Monday. However, he's replaced the Stonehorn with the Gluttons, which he threatened me that he was going to do that just to make me look like an idiot. So the Stonehorn's out of the list. And instead he's put in those 12 Ogre Gluttons, which I think is quite interesting. And he says he thinks he's going to prefer that. So I'm going to ask to interview him on the show anyway at some point soon to hear about that, because he's been doing really well with that. Again, don't forget, he's also gone Blood Gullet, so he's moved away from Winterbite. But he's still got the Tyrant's Guard, Slaughtermaster, and the Tyrant's obviously the General. So it's a lot of big boys on the board. But interesting coming out of Winterbite. That is that's interesting. I hadn't expected that, but we'll see. I've just read it. Thanks, bud. Winterbite doesn't help against Sentinels.
No shit. Yeah, man, that's not much, does eh? I don't like that. I think Lookout Sir is a really good rule, and to completely ignore that is a bit obnoxious. But anyway,
does it ignore it?
Yeah, because you're not, well, it doesn't ignore it, but in the sense that what the Lumineth player is really going for is those mortals on sixes or mortals on fives. They don't really care about the other shots that are -1 to hit.
Is it unmodified fives?
Yeah, baby.
Oh my god, fuck me. Okay, fine. Owen won't complain, but I will. That's stupid. I'm just going to say it out now. Okay, excited for the other armies getting books this year. Because, holy hell. do you remember when people were like, I can't believe you can have unmodified sixes to hit do something? Like, it's like, whoa. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the biggest fuck you to those Black Kings players. It's like, finally we get unmodified sixes. We've been waiting like 18 months. And then they're like, yeah, these elves, unmodified fives. You're so like, you know.
From 36 inches.
I don't know what you're
inches.
Talking about, mate. Yeah, just exactly.
Live your best life. All right, so my first list. Lumina Throne Lords, Zavil are stupid and correct. We do need to buff Croak. Couldn't agree with you more. And it does make total sense. Thanks, Gitly. Right, okay. So Stephen Follows is my list because now you'll have heard of stuff like you'd have heard of most of this list before, but it was more the fact that because of the points drops, I didn't really realise that you could do this, and I messaged you earlier, Owen, about it. But it's terrifying. So it's a Thricefold Befoulment list in Nurgle in Munificent Wanderers. And it's got a Great and Clean One, a Great and Clean One, obviously, and it's got Rottigus. It's got 30 Blade Bearers and 10 Blade Bearers. So sorry, everyone. It's got 30 Plague Bearers and 2 times 10 Plague Bearers. So, like, for me, I'm like, it's a pretty cool list. Like, that's a good. But it's what you can also add. So he's also added 9 Untamed Beasts, which obviously... everyone knows I'm a big fan of. You've got a Thricefold Befoulment anyway, so you're a low-ish drop, but not super low, because the Plague Bearers aren't in there. So currently you're rocking about a 6 drop. So having that that initial pre-game move to give yourself some room and potentially protect yourself, I think is good. But you can also still fit Bellicor in. And I was like, holy shit, you can also fit in Bellicor. Is outrageous. And I like that because you're going to play the objective game super well. You talked about battle line. Plague bearers are really obnoxious to get rid of most of the time anyway. The beasts are going to do that protection like they do. And then it allows all 3 bully boys to just run forward and smash. They'll do super well on focal points, obviously, because they're monsters. They'll do, like, just they're wizards. They're just awesome. They're very tough to get rid of, obviously. They've got Endless Gift is in there as well. As an artifact, I don't think the Witherstave is... Witherstave doesn't get a lot of love much anymore. But yeah, I really like that list. I really, really like it because I just think it's a cool list. It just, like, it looks super functional. I kind of wish each one of the major Chaos Gods had something similar, like 3 Thirsters running around together, 3 Keepers running around together, you know. I've always liked it. I always think it looks really fun. And they work really well together as well, because obviously as they're closer, the battalion means all 3 of them get better at spellcasting, but also they do more damage with the spells, and they heal more with the spells as well, which is just super nice. So I just really like that. And Bellicor only being 240 points is just outrageous.
Yeah, and it's got, I mean, he's even squeezed in the Geminids of Ulgish and the Portal, so he can do Rottigus's spell. And then he can do the spell where you draw a line back and everybody under it takes D3 mortals. And then he's got D3 mortals from Nids. And I believe that, like you said, with the battalion, the Thricefold, then you get, is it? I believe it's rather than D3 mortal wounds, it's like 3D3 mortal wounds if they're all within 6 inches.
Extra D3 for everyone within 6 inches, yeah. So 3D3 mortal wounds, which is pretty nice. And maybe they can tank some of the stuff. Interesting, we talk about... Sentinels specifically, you can make the Plague Bearers be like pretty tough to hit. Like, they'll be -2 to shooting in some cases.
-4, I believe.
Are they not normally -2 just for being
three? Oh no, yeah, they and are -2.
-2, but you can make them up to -4. But in the Sentinel situation, they can miss because they hit on 4s normally, don't they? I think 3s maybe. They hit on 3s normally. You can miss, but still do mortal wounds on the 5s.
Yeah, man. Sense don't care. It makes no sense. There we go. That's my quote for you there, Rob.
But you'll save, of those 39 mortal wounds going into 30 Plague Bearers, you'll save a third. So you'll save 13. So you'll have 7 left. I don't know what you're complaining about. That's fine. You'll be all good. But useful against KO.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and I mean, this has so many debuffs and lots of sort of hidden, like his spell loadout and things like that. Like, I believe one of the spells, again, apologies to the viewers, I'm not massively up on Nurgle, but I believe there's one that's, these boys, like, they are set up to tank, but they're only going to, you know, so there's a spell whereby I believe it's -1 to hit wound and save until the Great Unclean One moves. I think that's either Favored Poxes or Glorious Afflictions. That's one of them. So there's a minus one to hit there. There's a minus one to wound spell from Bellicor. There's minus one to hit from the Geminids. There's the inherent minuses to hit from all the Plague Bearers. And then if they finally, you know, if you finally get the opportunity to get into them without all of these debuffs up, then Bellicor can just switch off the key unit. It's got game. And I know that off the back of playing this on TTS, he's now like all in. I saw a picture on Twitter and he had like the whole list bought, like the three fat boys. And I think he's having a great time playing it, which I think is important as well, right? It's good to win, but also it's good to have a good time doing it. And I think in Munificent Wanderers, which we didn't touch on, the host, again, you know, Wrath of the Overchosen has given so much to the Nurgle book. Those Wanderers, does it ignore a Pip of Rend, I believe?
Yeah.
I can look at this. It ignores a Pip of Rend, and you can bounce mortals back on sixes to hit, as well.
While you look, I'm just gonna get a question out from John Thompson. A silly newbie question regarding unmodified hits against Nurgle. When they get to make you roll sixes, do the exploding sixes from Sinesh still happen, or do you have to re-roll them? You have to re-roll them because you're re-rolling the result, John, is what's happening. And then when you you get the sixes, you re-roll them, and then you get the actual sixes. Those are the ones that explode, not the first set. They don't explode, then you re-roll them because you're re-rolling the result. So you're finding out what the result is at the end of the re-roll. I hope that helps. And Tim Davis over on Facebook said, can get them negating minus one rend as well now with the Wrath of the Everchosen, which is what we were just talking about with the Munificent Wanderers. Hey, Jog PLC, I'm out, guys. Two phone calls later. I have no idea what's going on. We'll watch later. Hope you're okay, bud. Ignore rend, sixes to hit, bounce back, mortal wounds. That's why you see less Witherstave, says Prop Joe. Because, thanks Prop Joe, by the way, because of the Witherstave was an aura effect. It was an artifact that made units reroll sixes to hit against you, with a save not being in the list, probably, as Prop Joe is saying, because that Munificent Wanderer's ability. Is that right,
Owen? Yeah, it's basically, while an enemy unit is within 3 inches of any friendly Munificent Wanderer's demon units, so essentially the three fatties and all the Plague Bearers, they ignore minus the whole army. Well, the whole demon Nurgle element ignores minus one rend, so huge. And then if the unmodified hit roll for an attack made with a melee weapon that targets a friendly Munificent Wanderer's demon unit wholly within 12 inches of the general, so his generaling, each six to hit, if the hit roll is a six, the attacking unit suffers one mortal wound after all its attacks have been resolved. And that's each six. So if you've got a combat unit, you know, flying in and, you know, pumping a load of attacks in, every six to hit that they do while they're in range of the Great Unclean One does a mortal wound back to them. So it's difficult to shoot. You'll blow yourself up a little bit if you attack it, and then it's got loads of control and loads of debuff.
Yeah, and like Xavier is asking in the chat, aren't the three fatties and their bearers slow enough to be outran? Now, you would think that if you hadn't actually played against Nurgle before, but they are way faster than you've given credit for. So base movement 5, although one of them will have a bell, which gives you special ability Reverberating Summons, which is if a Nurgle unit begins movement with 7 inches of any models with a Doomsday Bell, you add 3 inches to its move. So now they're up to movement 8. However, the Feculent Gnarl Maws, which are on the board, they allow you to run and charge. So if you can run up to the Feculent Gnarl Maw and just get within range, you don't even have to be wholly within. Now you're running and charging. So you can basically add an additional 6 if you've got the CP onto that. So you can be up to 13. And if on the Nurgle wheel you end up with being at +2 move, which is in there, you now have 15-inch moving fatties who can still charge. So they are faster than you give them credit for. You can run the Plague Bearers as well. So like really everything in the army is basically movement 7 plus a D6, and depending on the placement and effect of an armor and their opponent's army, if it's the wheel, if the wheel's at 2 inches, the whole Nurgle army moves 9 inches at the start of the turn without runs. So they can be mid-board, which is normally 12 inches, is like the mid-board line. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's only 9. So they can be mid-board or across on the first turn. So they're very fast. It just doesn't seem like they're very fast. And it's down to that Nurgle, the tree placement, right? That's really important.
Yeah, and I think that's what's made us see a lot of Blight King lists, because inherently they're very slow, but it is that run and charge that that means you can sort of slingshot them into your opponent. Yeah, it's funny. It's one of those things. What do they call it? People are talking about ludonarrative dissonance. Mm-hmm. And how if you face this army, it looks like a sort of shambling, disease-ridden sort of army, that a bit like a, you know, like an attrition army that you're going to fight, a bit like a Bone Reapers kind of army or something that you're just going to have to hit. But but then suddenly everything, if he wants, everything's in your face.
Yeah. And like Gitly saying in the chat, fasties, not fatties. That's what you should call them. The three fasties. all right, so that's the Nurgle list. I really like that. I would almost describe that as probably the cookie cutter Thricefold list, personally. I think that's been honed to close to perfection. Big shout out to Stephen for that list. What's your next one, Owen?
The next one, we're going to stay in Chaos, and much to Meg's boyfriend's despair, I'm sure, we're going to have a look at a Khorne list.
Yeah, good. Let's do that.
You see what I did there, Rob? Yeah,
I really liked it. Really liked it.
So I've seen this gentleman playing on TTS a few times. Never had the pleasure of playing him. It's funny on TTS. Some people are just their normal name, and that's great. But some people have like an avatar name. So this is X Trog Dorks. Yes, I'm going to say it's either Trogdor or X Trog Dorks. Okay. But I know that he's been playing and honing this a lot. So this is a Blades of Khorne list, a mortal Blades of Khorne list without Archeon. So it is a proper Khorne list, I'm being told. So he's going with the Slaughter Host Goretide, which is really good. It's obviously you don't see mortal Khorne too much, but Goretide's great. It gives you reroll. The whole army rerolls ones to wound if they're wholly within 12 inches of a an objective, and obviously we want to fight over objectives, so that's good. And it has an excellent trait and artifact. I see that he's put the Talisman of Burning Blood on twice. So
can I just thank John Thompson for donating £3 on, for the first time ever, John, this is your first one to do it, YouTube. I appreciate that, John Thompson. That's super lovely of you. You're my first ever super chatter on YouTube. That's a thing you can do. And big love. Appreciate that. It's really nice. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring it up. Appreciate that. He wants to say pair character punching the air with fist and bump written on his knuckles. I'm sure. Okay. Sorry, I don't get it.
He's earned the right. £3. But yeah, breaking new ground. So this is Goretide. Now that gives you plus one damage on an attack. It's not really that important as the trait, and then the artifact does make somebody ethereal. Now he's got a slight issue with his list, but I presume he's making the Blood Secretor ethereal. So he's got a 3-up save just to protect that Secretor. So yeah, running from the top. It's a Bloodstoker who's called Sergeant Tickles, another Bloodstoker, Private Tickles. He's got Nobby the Blood Secretor, Abraham the Slaughter Priest, Simon the Slaughter Priest, and Cuddles, who is Bellicor, once again. Mm-hmm. Then we have 10 Blood Warriors, 10 Blood Reavers, 40 Chaos Marauders, 40 Chaos Marauders, a Chaos War Shrine, and the Gore Pilgrims Battalion. So he's coming in at 1940. So essentially, if you lined up against this, I think there's a chap, if I'm not mistaken, his name's Patrick Nevin in Australia, who went 5-0 at the SAGT with something similar to this. He lent a little bit more into the Slaves to Darkness element. But yeah, it's basically... It's making the most of those Marauders. So he's got a blood. I did the maths on this. He's got a Bloodstoker with a Talisman of Burning Blood. So Bloodstoker, at the start of the movement phase, he just looks at a unit wholly within 8. So he's going to be probably nestled in the middle of a load of Marauders. Mm-hmm. He just goes, right, lads, you're super motivated. And it gives them +3 to run, +3 to charge, and reroll wounds. So, you know, we know how good... just doing stuff is. No dice, just you're going to do better. And then the Talisman of Burning Blood is an aura wholly within 12 inches, +1 to run and charge. So the Marauders are at plus four. So if they roll a double one, they're going to go 12 inches. If they roll a double six, they're going to go 17 inches. So, and then he has Brazen Fury on the War Shrine. So he can make that's a prayer for Battleshock immunity. So that's a four up for a rerollable four up early game when he's near the shrine to make a unit Battleshock immune. And then he's got his Slaughter Priest has got Blood Sacrifice, and then he's got another one with Bronzed Flesh. So he's got that block of 10 Blood Warriors is nice because you can get them on a three up save and then he could whip and sling them forward. So they're actually a really good tagging unit. They've got the Gore Fist, so they're going to bounce Mortal Wounds back on sixes. And then, yeah, he's obviously got enough. He's got enough points to chuck Bellicor in and still be 60 points under to get a nice triumph. So he can make those Marauders, for example, like we say, they've got an insane charge. They can be Battleshock immune. They can be re-rolling their hits and wounds from the War Shrine. No, not hits and wounds. Sorry, they can re-roll their hits from the War Shrine, re-roll their wounds from the Bloodstoker, and then they're just going to go out like an absolute bomb and blow up. And then when they blow up, then they're going to create lots of nice blood tithe. So he can, you can just send stuff off like missiles, blow stuff up, create blood tithe, use that to move, and all that other sweet tech that we know blood tithe does. It's relatively fragile, and he's not got a huge amount of screens, but even so, there's loads of tech in there, and you know how much I love Khorne. So
I think trying to defeat the major problem that Khorne has, which is movement, is a noble attempt at least. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like you've said, like there are movement. I mean, dear God, just for one command ability for run and charge in the army. Just one for Khorne. It's all that they need, in my opinion. That would be nice.
They have got one in here. Gortide allows Blood Reavers and Blood Warriors. Ooh, actually, yeah, we've missed out something there. Gortide allows Blood Reavers and Blood Warriors to run and charge, and I think it's already, and it's also an auto six. So you auto six the run, and then they can run and charge. So I think those Blood Warriors can be surprising to throw forward. So
they could, so they could have plus six. They could have the plus three to move, and then the auto six.
Yes, but the only thing, you can't run and charge the Marauders. It's just that unit of Blood Warriors.
Yeah, just the Blood Warriors, but still interesting. Still interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. If they're on a three-up save, you've got 20 wounds there to chew through.
You said, there's some blood tithe up. You get the double movement. There's some super interesting tech there. I do think that weirdly, Khorne is one of the most interestingly techie kind of armies to play. They've got so many inherent buffs. They've got the, like, they don't just get their next ability next turn, you know, like a tide. You know, they've got a resource that they're manipulating and using, which somehow is also tied into their summoning, which doesn't seem fair. Like, some people get both. They've got to, like, just do it all in one pool, but whatever. It's interesting. Very much so.
I think the fact you can use Blood Tithe without any restriction in terms of needing a hero nearby or anything. So even like late game turn five, you've got five little blood letters that you've summoned up onto a back objective earlier in the game. You can just go, okay, I'm going to spend three Blood Tithe and I'm going to run them onto the other objective, or I'm going to charge them into that one key combat piece that my opponent wants to move up the board towards me. I think I'm putting it out there, I think Khorne is the best book in the game. I'm not saying competitively. I'm just saying to like dig into and like all the synergies and all the mechanics. The War Scrolls might need a bit of help, but I love it. My new saying is like tech for the tech god. I think they've got more tech than anyone knows what to do with. It's brilliant. Anyway, I'm going to stop fanboying on Khorne, but okay. I really like that. That list.
You're allowed to do that. Apologies, everyone, for our internet connection. It's gone a bit dodge and may even have just died. Sorry about that. There's some issues in the venue where I'm at the minute, so we're trying to fix it at the minute. And you podcast guys don't care. All right, so next list. I just see it on zero at the minute, Owen, so it might not be live at all of all the things.
Well, I've got nowhere to be, man. I know it's frustrating, but we'll just...
it's okay. It's just nice when it's just one brick. Just you do the show, you turn the show off. Like, yeah. Anyway, so I might talk about the two Sinesh lists, because I know you did a Sinesh list as well, but they were kind of back to back, and I just thought it would be. I think I like both of them is what I'm going to talk about. So I'll talk about both. So the one that I think is kind of has really got legs and I like seeing it explored, is this Lurid Haze Archeon list, which I don't know if that's the one you chose.
Is that Stefan Gmür?
Yes.
Yeah. The more you look into that, the more bonkers it is, right? It's really, really good. And it actually touches on what someone in the chat has said. Jack Sumner's in the chat said, I think it's hilarious that the best use of Slayers to Darkness unit is to run them in a different army. And I think that opinion or that point is only backed up by Stefan's list, really, isn't it? I mean, they're the Slaves to Darkness elements that you can take into these different Chaos books just elevates them or gives you different options, and I think that's perhaps why you're seeing perhaps a bit more Khorne and a bit more Sinesh in these tournaments, because it's giving them some new reinvigorating them, let's say.
Yeah, the Slaves to Darkness book has increased their potency significantly, especially just with like throwing Bellicor in there as like the simplest version, and then using all the Slaves to Darkness stuff, which just is like Slaves to Darkness stuff with bonus rules if you take rid of the leaders, basically. So yeah, Stefan's got an Invaders host list, which is Archeon. He's got the Boon of Damnation and the Law of Pleasure and Pain, which is Dark Delusions. He's got a Chaos Lord, who's a general. He's got Feverous Anticipation and the Oil of Exaltation, and then a Chaos Sorcerer Lord, who is the Rod, who's got the Rod of Misrule, which we used to see a lot on Sinesh builds in the past. And then battle line, there's 40 Chaos Marauders, 20 Chaos Marauders, 10 Chaos Warriors, don't forget they're all marked Sinesh, and then 5 Chaos Knights. And they're all in the Pleasure Bound Warband. Also, big shout out to Dave Chin in the chat. I just saw him a second ago and I loved it. He's a lovely, lovely, lovely man. The Golden Chin Awards are some of my favorite painting awards you can get. Owen, what did you think of this list?
I just the more I looked into it, the more I liked it, because straight off, like headline, it's a one drop, right? I haven't got that wrong, because you have it's basically 7 units, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yeah, so you need to fill out the Pleasure Bound Warband, you need a Slaanesh mortal hero. So obviously Archeon has the Head of Knights of Slaanesh keyword, and he is both mortal and demon. So he's the hero, and then 6 other units. So he has the Lord, the Chaos Lord, the Marauder, the 2 units of the Marauders, the Warriors, and the Knights. So bosh, one drop, not often seen. I'm in already. And then the Lurid Haze ability allows, so it's another one of those weird ones where Lurid Haze sits within Invaders, which then sits within Slaanesh. So the Lurid Haze, I think the headline on that one really is that you D3, after setup is complete and before the first battle round, D3 units can be taken off the board, and then at the end of your first movement phase, they can be deep struck on, wholly within 6 of a board edge, 9 away. Mm-hmm. So based on the conversation that we've just had about how amazing Marauders are, then you have that threat in your opponent's mind. You know, it's a one drop. You're going to control the flow of the battle to a certain extent early on. And if you do, you know, set up relatively defensively, you can take some key pieces off, and then that's just in your opponent's head. I mean, everyone really, you know, it's an extra element to the game when you're constantly having to think about screening out your important pieces, and you're stretching your opponent's army out and maybe making, you know, the center a little bit weaker. Those kind of mind games, I think, are brilliant. And the fact that perhaps, you know, say he rolls the 2 on the D3, he could put a Chaos Lord plus the Marauders, so you get a reroll on that charge, and then the Lord is going to be wholly within 12, so they can pile in and attack twice. There's lots of activations in here, isn't there?
It's also great anti-KO. It's great because it can control the midfield really, really quickly, making their movement drop around really, like, really tough. Getting rid of Archeon's like a nightmare situation. Plus, Archeon in Sinesh is just going to be like, like absolutely farming depravity like it's going out of fashion, which is like, which is actually really, really important as well. Like, there's so much damage he's taking, healing, and doing.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a great way. That's why, like, the concept that Sinesh is dead on arrival is just not accurate. It's just the one build that we saw. Apologies.
The one build that we saw.
Like, and anyone can talk about, like, oh, no, actually, I took Suicide Supreme Cyberites and I did this. It's like, no, you all just did X amount of keepers and you just generated depravity. So, like people are now exploring it, and I think that that's exceptional. I think that's really, really fun. Now, like, as much as we rag on Seraphon, I do like the fact that you see the Fangs list, and then you see someone jump over into Thunder Lizard, and then you think, okay, like, you know, they've got some similar elements, very much so, like Croak and the Astroloth, for instance, but, you know, there's at least this. This is fun. This is, like, really giving it. And I think that Lurid Haze, which is, by the way, I found in Wrath of the Everchosen, really has expanded out, and then just seeing Archeon go into all these lists has been really, really fun. So, yeah, I really like this, personally. Like, I think it's a super, super cool list. And it's nice watching people explore Sinesh outside. Like, you know, maybe it's a year later, but they're exploring it, which is fun. Although this has been played before a few times, like over the COVID period. That's why I talked about it. And then have you got anything else to say about that, Owen?
Yeah, I mean, the Pleasure Band, Warband ability, what that does is, I believe that if a unit from the battalion dies, then all the other units from the battalion get to pile in an extra 3 inches when they activate till your next hero phase. I'm going to triple check that. But yeah, there is an element of something dies and then you get an extra 3 inch pile in, which with a big base like Archeon and going twice, you know, 6 inch pile in going twice is some serious moving and tagging.
And what's the mechanic on him going twice, Owen?
That would be from the Chaos Lord.
Okay, so he has to be near the Chaos Lord to make that happen, right?
Yes, which is, you know, not necessarily always going to happen. It's quite hard to get off, but if you do line it up correctly, I mean, if you take your D3 units off, it could just be Archeon and the Lord. But Archeon's going to get reroll saves from the Sorcerer Lord just because he gets pointed at during the hero phase. I want to just clarify exactly what that Pleasure Bound does. I know that this isn't great TV, but I would rather get it right. So the Pleasure Bound Warband is the perverse yearnings. The sight of inflicted torment sees these decadent warriors surge forth, eager to give and receive the gift of agony. Isn't that sounds a bit like Nathan's Weekends, isn't it?
It does.
If a model from this battalion is slain, if a model from this battalion is slain in the combat phase, units from the same battalion can move an extra 3 inches when they pile in until your next hero phase.
No way. So one model
dies, the whole army gets a 6-inch pile in.
And is that'll be also every turn. That'll also be your opponent's so your army has 6-inch pile in the whole game.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
That's bonkers.
The spells he's taken have given him like battle shock immunity and +1 to hit. He's got a heal on Archeon, and then we haven't even mentioned like the classic Sinesh stuff. So all the sixes are exploding. So, you know, Slayer of Kings, for example, gonna get exploding sixes on that. All those Marauder attacks, so 40 Marauders, 81 attacks, exploding on sixes. It's good. It's going to slay a lot of stuff. And then, you know, the summoning, whilst it's been nerfed, is still, you know, excellent in the late game.
It's still
game.
There, though.
Yeah, man.
It's still there.
Absolutely.
It's just in line with everyone else's now. It's just not broken. It's not 80% win rate broken. Like, the complaint that it's been nerfed is like, yes, that's so fine, but it's still great. It's as good as the best summoning in the game. Like,
it's a bit like as an OBR player, it's still like Petrifex. Like, Petrifex took a kick in the balls, but adding a pip of rend onto your unit which already has -1 rend, so like 40 skeletons with -2 rend, is still really, really good. So I think sometimes when something gets kicked, people completely disregard it, but then, you know, it's just, there is still a lot of inherent strength there, right? Even if it wasn't as good as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I'm just going to quickly talk about the other SNES list because it's more, it's not more traditional, but it's super fun, and I still think this always looks great. So this is Jukka Pekka Haikinen. I apologize, that's definitely wrong. But it's a Godseeker host. He's got a Bladebringer on Exalted Chariot, and he's got that three times. He's got Shalaxy and a Keeper of Secrets, and then he's got an Exalted Hero of Chaos, and then he's got three Seeker Chariots as his battle line and Supreme Cyberite. So it is very much like, you know, an old school version of how you would see this army play, but changed up enough because it's got the chariots. You did see chariot lists before as well, but this is just fun. I just really like this. Anyway, I just thought honorable mention because it was just great. Owen, you got another one?
I have, yes. I reckon we might have both chosen the same one. Who, you said you chose a Sons of Bayomat list.
I did.
Did you choose Ashes list?
I did not.
Ooh, okay. Well, why don't I talk about Ashes quickly? Yeah. So, because I've played a couple of times now against these big lads, there are quite a lot of Sons of Bayomat armies out there in sort of TTS world.
What was your experience of playing against it?
I mean, in the hands of a good player, they're a headache. Just because, but I mean, without turning into salty Owen, because I do really love Warhammer, it's a bit of a crap game. Just because it's like, can you kill 35 wounds on a 4-up save times 3? Can you kill it quick enough? The kicking objectives and stuff is fun, and I haven't won yet. I've lost both my games, once against Colonel because he said, I've only got half an hour to play the game. Come and charge me in the middle. So I charged him in the middle, and then he went and won because Archeon got one-shotted by a gatebreaker. I didn't read the war scroll, and he's got -3 rend, 3 damage. So, yeah.
It's normally a problem, not reading, not knowing what something does when you charge it.
Yeah, I'm not normally that guy. And then Simon Weekly, who's an excellent player. He beat me on turn 5 again with playing Khorne against him, but it was a great game. So yeah, I respect them more than I used to. Ash is taking the Taker tribe, so this is the one whereby the big lads count, the Mega Gargants count as 30 models and the little Man Crushers count as 15 rather than 10, which can be a real headache because how often do you have like a 10 man unit protecting an objective, and then they just walk up with one of these big dudes and just steal it off with you without even having to fight. Mm. So he's got a Kraken Eater, who's the general. He has the extremely intimidating command trait, which is the -1 to hit in melee. And then I haven't seen this before, but he's put he's from Akshi, so he's taken the Realm artifact, the Incandescent Rage Blade, on the Gatebreaker. So that basically gives him 6s exploding, much like Slaanesh that we've just talked about, which is pretty great because I know he only hits on 4s. But, you know, if you've got sort of 10 attacks, then you're going to maybe get a couple of 6s in there. And then that sort of makes up for the potential that you've lost with the 4s to hit. He's then got a War Stomper, Mega Gargant. So he's got one of each. And then he has 3 individual Man Crushers.
I think you'll see that a lot. You'll see a lot of people take 3 of the 3. And the reason you'll see people take a lot of 3 is it's really easy to get rid of the baby Man Crushers. But like you said, it's just a case, like, they're not taking the 3 because it provides loads of functionality, and again, I'm not speaking for Sons of Behemoth players, it's just they're like, can you kill 35 wounds? Like, this is your conversation, like, that's it. Like, it's like taking all the Blight Kings, they're like, can you kill all these? What's your, like, that's it. And some armies don't have, like, that volume of output, but some are like, you talk about the Sentinels, like we were joking about there, like, they'd take out one a turn, but can you take out all 3 by turn 3? But it depends on the scenario. That's why, anyway, it doesn't matter. We could go about this all day. Anyway, yeah. It's a... You carry on.
No, it's a... Yeah, they are a thing, and we will see them a lot. Just thinking about perhaps the list that we've talked about, can they take down a mega... Because that's the experience from playing against them, is it's nothing more frustrating than just going in with your unit and leaving it on 2 wounds. So 2 wounds, but it still counts as 35. And, you know, even, you know, the maximum size unit that you're going to get into them would be perhaps a 40 block of, let's say, Marauders. Mm. He's going to kill a lot of Marauders and still keep that objective. Yeah, so it's quite, it's a very interesting, it's a different, it seems to be like a different type of game to what you normally play.
I think anything that's lower drop that just drops anything in front of it so it can't move wins automatically, because they're like, you just play the other game. That's why I've never rated it, because they're like, I'm going to run on the objectives. You're like, okay, I'm just going to not let you run on the objectives. What's your game plan now? They'll be like, no fallback. I've got no fallback against that. I've got no fallback against a one drop. I've got no fallback against teleports. I've got no fallback about anything that's faster than me. End conversation. Like it's a non-game in those situations, but doesn't matter. Like, their one tactic is, I will run on objective and stand there. And if you can just make that not happen, they can't play the game. It's as simple as I see it.
That's very fair. But when obviously Ash is an excellent player, so I'll be
such a gorgeous looking man.
Yeah, he's quite the looker. In researching his list, I saw a photo of him on Twitter. Woo!
Woo!
I'm interested to see in the hands of an excellent player like Ash, see what he does with it. Surely you just kill the three little ones as quickly as possible as well, and then the big boys can't be everywhere.
They're literally one place on an objective. I'm with you completely. The other thing, so the version I looked at was a Take a Tribe Again, which a Kraken Eater and a War Stamper, but there was no Gatebreaker in this list. And then there was three little baby man crushers in one block, and then three ones as well. So you just have more man crushers, which ultimately I'm kind of like, again, like their output is like, meh. Like, it's fine. Their output's fine. It's damage one, though. Like, yeah, it's 30 attacks. Like, but I don't know. Like, it's anyway, yeah. But, like, it's cool. It's cool to see them perform. I can't wait to see how they play, especially in what seems to be a pretty competent field of armies. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing them play and seeing, like, how they actually do. So some actual data. See if my feelings, like, are played out in the game, or if it like goes a different way, so we'll end up seeing there. And that's all I've got, Owen. That's all the ones I chose.
I've got one more if you want to have a chat about it.
Yeah, please do.
Just quickly. So this again, just to kind of, you know, I know that I do come across a bit salty about shooting and stuff, so I'm trying to be a little bit more level-headed and analyze things rather than just going, oh god, it's Seraphon Fangs of Sotek. So I have chosen the Seraphon Fangs of Sotek list. So this is a chap called Michael G, or Michelle G, I think Michael G. Seraphon Fangs of Sotek. He's taken Lord Croak, who's got Mystical Unforging as his spell rather than Stellar Tempest. He has an Astrolith Bearer with the Serpent God Dagger. He has two Skink Star Priests, two Skink Priests, 2x40 Skinks, 5 Saurus Guard, and 20 Camo Skinks, along with a Balewind Vortex, Bound Geminid Savulgish, and a Bound Purple Sun. 2,000 points on
Bound Purple Sun's
the
fun.
Nose. Yeah, I'm just like, there's a few things in here. I mean, I just like the fact that he's gone double Star Priest, double Priest, and that made me think, like, you see the priest and the star priest come up all the time, and it's like, why? And like, when you look at that, I did the research on it. Those star priests and priests, effectively, from a single priest and a single star priest, you get the mortal wounds on sixes, which perfectly synergizes.
Yeah, you don't have to roll for that.
No roll. Perfectly synergizes with the Fangs of Sotek ability when. There's an ability that if they're charged, so your 40 block of skinks, if they're charged, you can spend a CP, which you have a bounty of CP, and you can shoot, and then on a 4+ you can retreat. So those skinks are going to rinse a load of normal shots and a load of mortal wounds into you before you even get the chance to swing, and on a 4+ they piss off and you're grasping at thin air. So the priests give you their mortals. That's the star priest. And then the little skink priest, 70 points. You know, you talk about best war scroll in the game. Mm-hmm. From him, from an ability, so on a 3+ and also spending a CP, he can make the same unit or another unit plus one to save. It can run, shoot, and charge, and plus one to hit. So that's quite an insane package. So, for example, he's got these two forces of 40 skinks, and each of them has a priest and a star priest behind them. And they are just going to rain hot death on you, whether you charge them. And in Fangs of Sotek, they get the plus three to their movement on the first turn, I believe, as well, don't they? So they can, even if you screen out nicely, they can run and shoot and charge and do mortals. The camo skinks soak up the mortal wound buff from the Star Priest really nicely as well. So they're doing sixes to hit are doing mortal wounds. Sixes to wound are doing mortal wounds. And yeah, it's really, really good.
It's super strong. It's super strong. It's like you said before as well, like, and I think like towards the top of the show, is the fact that like the prayer is a 3+, so you do have to roll it. But the other stuff is just you choose, and then you just choose that's happening, and it's just terrifying. Can I just say a big thank you to Battletoad for gifting some gift subscriptions in the chat? So loads of love for that as well.
What a hero,
lovely man. Yeah, like it's super super strong, and they're really cheap characters as well. Like it reminds you of Hags back in the past. You know, Hags had an ability that they rolled for. So something automatic and then something that happens more likely than not is really important as well. And the fact that unlike spells or even maybe a command ability that's located to one unit, it's applicable in multiple situations. You know, you really could see running three priests, three star priests, three blocks of 40, you know, and just being like, what are you going to do when I run and shoot 120 of these guys forward? Like, it's horrific. Like, it's really like polarizing. But it's very like it can happen, and they're scary. Like, you know, it's a cool list, and really a lot of it comes down to like the buffs are easy to achieve. The buffs are located in like just two places that are super cheap, and then they're going on to super cheap units. So you're just amping up reliably very cheap units to a terrifying degree, right? Like. You know.
Yeah, not forgetting the fact that all these buffs are put on in the hero phase, and then they can just teleport one unit for free for no CP, in and out of combat. You know, you can just what we love, Rob, as you know, and as I've played the game more and more and more, and what I've, you know, it's kind of applied wisdom is we're looking for consistency and reliability with our armies, aren't we? And that's why we're building in all these synergies and things. And what the Seraphon book brings is just so much consistency and reliability. There's no, like, the opportunity cost is very low, isn't it? If that's the right term. It's like they just know that their stuff can do this. So that frees their mind to be able to think about how they're going to apply all of these tools to the battle plan and their opponent. So it just clears the mind a little bit, makes things a lot simpler that you know. Croak can do this, the priest can do this, I can do this, that's going to go there. And then that's why it becomes so oppressive to play against, because you're hustling and constantly trying to figure out ways to negate their strengths, whereas they're just sat on the other side of the road like a frog, like, I'm just going to do this to you. And that's why it gets frustrating. So that's
I think ultimately anything that doesn't have counterplay, I think Marcus Rock is saying in the chat, ultimately prayers, I think even when they first came out, we all had discussions about this quite significantly, is prayers are not fun because the other person isn't engaging with you. Spells are fun because you roll. I think I played Nathan the other day. I rolled a 10 to cast something, then he rolled a 12, and I was like, well, you know.
What can you do about that?
But like, that's fun because I'm engaging with them and they're engaging with me in like mind battles and space bullets, which is just the best. Prayers are a bit like, you know, I wouldn't mind them releasing a faction that's anti-prayer, like that does something, you know, or that has something that can shut down prayers, you know, just like a big block of atheists, you know, just like in the center of the board.
That's the next one. That's the next chamber, Rob. It's the atheist
The scientist chamber. They're just like, I stop your prayers with the power of facts and logic. That would
they be... run around taking little fish icons off the back of Devoted of Sigmar, you know, cars or whatever. Sorry, I don't know where I went with that. You know, the little fish. one thing I wanted to touch on, I know that we've got to go in a second, but there was a cool artifact that you never see. Oh, no, sorry, a cool spell. So Lord Croak has taken the spell Mystical Unforging. Do you know what that does?
Doesn't that destroy an artifact?
Yeah, it does, which I really like. So it's only 18-inch range, but then obviously he has the obligatory... He does have that.
Balewind
and Astrolith. So we're talking 12. About... Yeah, so he's adding 12. So it's like... I think it's actually only 12-inch. So it's like 24-inch range, and they suffer D3 mortal wounds, and then on a 5-up, you just take the artifact off them. So, you know, I was just thinking about certain things like, you know, spell in a bottle, like I'll have that. Or, you know, your Patrician's Helm from your Tempest Eye. Or there's a lot of key artifacts that really make, you know, a hero do his thing. And, yeah, it's just a bit of a fun pick that he's... He can swap the spell, though. Is that correct at the end of the turn?
He can swap out
the spell if he wants to?
Maybe. I actually don't know that. Normally, you almost just see the Horde Clearing spell every time.
The Stellar Tempest.
I actually like that pick. That's cool. You'd be like, no, take that off you. That would be really fun. I'd love to do that to the... yeah, really fun. That's super fun. Yeah, just boof, get it off. Yeah.
See you later. So, yeah, there we go. I chose a Seraphon list. I'm not the King of Salt. I just... I don't think you are. I just played it against it a lot.
Being analytical of the game and pointing out both the things that you love and the things that you don't love is true and honest, and I appreciate you doing it on the show. I don't think anyone thinks you're salty in that situation. Just shoot the prayers. Oh my God, it hurts me. All right, thanks for today. It's been a pleasure. It's been super fun. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Good luck to everyone who's playing in this event. Thank you to PASC for organizing it as well, so some people can play online with each other. And thank you again to Games Workshop continually for not shutting down TTS, which is, they at least deserve that love. Although I'm sure they're using it for playtesting, so that doesn't overly matter. Owen, you got any shout-outs before we head out today?
I'll just shout out PASC for putting the tournament on. And I was thinking, like, through the course of the show, I was thinking perhaps we could, because it's a six, it's over six games over 6 weeks, perhaps we could check in and see how these lists are doing. And
I'd love to.
That'd be fun, right? And just see, because it'll be like a tournament that gradually is... unfolding as we go through the next 6 weeks. So shouts to PASC, and I'm playing, and I've got a Blades of Khorne mirror. Look at that, round one. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I want to shout
nice.
Out. Yeah, I'll shout out my opponent. Who's that? It is Scott Robertson. I'm going to be facing off. He's got 5 Bloodthirsters in Tyrants, Baleful Lords. He's going to be running forward. And we'll see if Archeon can get them all in the sword. And we're going to have a lovely time. So, shout out to Scott and look forward to playing him soon.
Okay, well, I hope everyone who's playing has a great time. And bye. I want to say thank you to everyone in the chat. Diadrin, I see you, Diacasm. Ziggy, big love to you, you gorgeous man. Halalex, Prop Joe, Tristan, good night, sleep well. Marcus Rock, Zavio, Tywinin, you guys are all brilliant. Thanks for joining us every day. It's been a pleasure. Thank you to everyone on Patreon. Thank you to everyone on the Honest War Game podcast. You guys stay hydrated and look after yourselves. Don't forget,